This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on Monocle 24 on February the 16th, 2013.
A handsome newsstand in the heart of Sydney, a tote full of Aussie reading tips, and two women who know their way around a crinoline. Time to advance Australia Fair for edition 25 of The Stack, today in Sydney. Hello and welcome to the special Sydney edition of The Stack. I'm Tyler Brulé. Earlier in the week, we jumped the Tasman Sea after a few days in Auckland, and we're now in Monocle's third biggest market. Yes, it's official. Australia now comes after the US and the UK as the biggest market for our title. This should not come as much as a surprise, as Australians love a good mag, and despite some takeovers and consolidation amongst the bigger players, the indie end of the market is absolutely booming. We'll be talking business, art direction, and sound journalism with two very special guests today, perched elegantly around the table. And joining us around the table today are two very dear editors, one a very dear friend, one a newish friend who I met quite recently. But I will start with my nearest and dearest, Robin Holt. Many will, of course, know her, not just, of course, from her time at the Monocle brand, but also a very long career at Condé Nast. Not too long, but yeah, but long enough. Certainly one of the godmothers I would say really sort of, you know, one of the founding madams of really lifestyle publishing in this country, all great lovers of the early work that we saw coming out of Condé Nast and Vogue, and both Vogue Living and Vogue Entertaining, as two titles which were, of course, you know, serious players in really making a mark in Australia. Robin was part of, but then also made the jump up to Russia as well, and looked after GQ, looked after Glamour, launched Architectural Digest, and many, many other things. But she's also the chairperson of the Northern Territory Tourism Commission here in Australia. Also television. I could go on and on and on, but Robin Holt, welcome back. Great to see you.
Oh, Tyler, it's great.
And it's
to
a bit of an
here.
Anniversary. It's a bit of an anniversary as well, because by the time this goes out, it's our sixth anniversary. It'll be six years of Monocle.
The 14th of February, I remember that day incredibly well, as we all watched the very first issue together, remember? And Shinzo Abe is the Prime Minister again.
I know, it's gone completely full circle. But I can remember that day at our office when those first boxes arrived from Dorset and we ripped them open, and there it was. And then also knowing that we then went on our magical mystery tour of the world. Well, at least mentioning Shinzo Abe, we headed off to Japan, of course, to kick it off on this side of the world.
I know, it was amazing. Can you remember there was Sweden, there was Japan, there was London, there was New York. It all sort of happened in a blur. And then the next issue was there.
Yeah, exactly. But amazing that it was. I was thinking about it on the flight over earlier this week, coming in from Auckland, and just thinking, God, you know, 6 years. You know, where did it go? And I think back to, you know, my time doing Wallpaper is actually, mm-hmm. you know, it's been longer than that. I think only then I got 49 issues under my belt. Here we are, 61, issue 62, about to go to bed. Right now, you're, of course, involved, and I should probably say, though, as well, for people who don't know, you're the managing director of our business. You were there in the very early days thinking, when is this baby going to launch? Because there weren't many false starts. We just had a course correction in terms of strategy, something very different and unique happened. We had been to speak to banks and institutions and Absolutely. Other media companies, and we were figuring out how to do it. And then one day, magically, some of our friends from Spain said, we'd like to do it, but we don't want to have any, you know, odd media companies, and we certainly don't want to have any know-it-all bankers. We just want people who are committed, who love publishing, to be involved. Remember Maria Reg?
I do actually remember all of it, because I remember thinking, my gosh, the expectations from banks are really high. And they were pushing us really tremendously for the sort of money that we were looking for. And right, starting with your great friends in Spain, going on to Sweden, then to Japan, and it all fell into place. And then magically, when the world went into meltdown, you and I became the brains of, why did you not go to venture capitalists? We were like, because we knew there was something wrong.
No, which was, and still to this day, I've been on a bit of a, we're not quite a speaking tour, just had, there's been a succession of speeches recently, and a lot of people asking that same question now, because I think, you know, you get over sort of, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years doing a magazine, and people are very interested as to why we didn't go with any institutions, and why we didn't link up with any media companies, why we thought independence was important. And all I can say is just, thank God we didn't quite have a crystal ball, but I think, but in many ways, I think under your stewardship, I think we, you know, we knew, we definitely sort of knew what felt right based on your experience on both the editorial and certainly the money side of things. And, you know, and mine is, you know, of course, you know, an editor and someone who knows a good deal when I see one.
And you know what? Just think about this. You've got the same board of people, the same investors, everything. And that goes to prove that, in fact, those people really wanted to be part of this. They didn't just want to make money and walk away. They wanted to be part of media. And that's the whole magic of it. That's why when people say, but you know what, magazine's dead, isn't this a dead issue, whatever. It's not, because there are people who genuinely want to put their energy, time and money into having a piece of paper, a printed material in front of them. And I know that's what you want to go talk about later on.
Yeah, well, that's what most of this program is about. We try not to go too far off track. We should go a little bit off track, though, up the coast. And I want to introduce Louise Bannister. And Louise Bannister is the co-founder of Frankie Magazine. And in many ways, I'm going off script slightly, but I was just thinking about what's great having the two of you here. You know, Robin on one side, who really has defined many ways, sort of, you know, that first lifestyle wave that came out of this country, really exporting an Aussie way of living on paper. But then I think, Louise, your work with Frankie, and of course also with, you know, many listeners will of course know the Smith Journal, because it gets brought up very frequently on this program as well. You represent I think a second wave, when, you know, as Robin was saying, so many people sort of thinking about, oh, it's all doom and gloom. It's at a very exciting time in this market. So for people who aren't familiar with Frankie, tell us about what you saw. Where was the gap in the market?
Well, thank you for having me on the show. We, Lara and I, who's the creative director of Frankie and Smith, basically saw a massive hole in the market about 8-9 years ago this year. Frankie started, and just no intelligent women's magazines. That's what we felt at the time. So we felt a little bit ripped off, I guess, and launched Frankie, and we were both creative and wanted to look at pretty pictures and lovely aesthetics and things like that. And that's how Frankie came about. And it's kind of, a lot of people are really surprised when I say we've been around for 9 years, because it seems like we've had an overnight success, but it hasn't been like that at all.
Never is.
No.
even though sort of people might project that on you, but anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because, you know, the big news in Australia anyway is getting audited, and advertisers want you to be audited, and we weren't for many years. So there's a lot of knocking agency doors and, you know, trying to impress people. And now we're audited and we've got fantastic numbers. It's a lot easier. But hopefully the editorial ethos has remained the same.
I mean, I didn't want to go right in on a business tack right away, but why not? Because you open up the door. That notion of being audited and of course agencies, you know, wanting to know, you know, what are the numbers, you know, how real are they, etc. Early days, and one thing, now that we've been doing this program for a number of weeks, it's amazing how many young editors listen, people who also want to start up their own magazines. So for you, and I've got, you know, and Robin will have her answers as well, how important was it going to agencies versus just going to clients direct, you know, where you knew you had a passionate, you know, CMO, CEO, owner of a brand who said, I just love Frankie and I don't really care, you know, I just want to be part of it because it's beautiful, it's well edited, and I'm not really interested in cost per thousands.
How many people said?
Well, yeah, early days. And did you just go around the agencies?
No, we had to hit agencies, but they frequently shut the doors in our faces, which was quite humbling. But also, I think it's really good for that to happen at the beginning as well. I think you learn a lot about yourself, obviously. And we were quite young. We were 25, so we really had no idea what we were doing. But directs were wonderful. They really supported the magazine for 5 years or so. And now agencies are wonderful as well because...
that's diplomatic, but isn't it, Robin?
Oh, very diplomatic. I got to say, in the early days, we act, and thanks to Tyler's relationship with a lot of the key players, we really hit people directly. And, you know, I think that made a big difference because people wanted to be part of the Monocle world. In fact, we took their product and shot it in a Monocle way for them to have a different voice that actually sat very comfortably within the pages. And that made a massive difference to the type of people who came in. Not necessarily the same ads that you would open in any of the glossy magazines and go, oh my, there's Prada, there's Rolex, there's, you know, they were there. But they actually had a really wonderful Monocle signature. And that, of course, fed into having the agencies go, I haven't seen this ad before. And where's this coming from? And where's this creative? And why
how did
aren't
it happen?
I
oh, and how dare you go and see the owner
My
of
client.
The company? But tell me, you have probably some very different stories as well. When you went to work for Condé Nast in Russia, you know, there is, of course, established titles. You also launched titles What was it like in that market? And certainly, you went into a time when everybody wanted to be in Russia. And we saw such a surge of titles from a variety of the big multinationals, Russian companies also getting in on the mix. Was it important to have that direct relationship with the client as opposed to the media buying agency? What was it like? I mean, I do recall... You're often paid in cash.
Well, I had to put a stop to that. In fact, that was the very one of the very reasons I went there due to auditing, which was, no, we don't deal in cash. But I've got to say that the agencies did not have the position in Russia. I think they'd all fled when the ruble collapsed in the turn of the, I think it was 1999 when it collapsed. Most of the agencies, packed their bags and left. Smart Russians took over the brands and, of course, in subsequent years made a fortune out of actually having, you want the brand back, you buy it back. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. But so there weren't really agencies. So what you had to do was to go to people who had the license to actually either represent Armani or represent Saint Laurent or represent those people. So like one person, Mr. Friedland, owned all of those brands. And so what was the point of going to any agency? He was the one that's going to say yes or no to you. So it was all about actually learning to negotiate in Russian, which meant get it signed as quickly as possible and leave the room as quickly as possible because they're going to change their mind.
Louise, let me ask you, we're going to go to a break in a moment, but so we probably only have about two more minutes for our publishing tutorial. But 9 years in, how active and how involved are you still in the selling of the the pages, the brand, the essence, versus giving it to sort of a wider team?
I'm probably more involved than ever, funnily enough, because now I'm publisher of both titles and Frankie Press in general. I manage the advertising team and Lara and I are heavily involved in trade. So we do all the trade. We've always controlled the marketing. We've always controlled, we're control freaks and our staff will tell you that. But we've maintained a really close rein on it because I think editorially in Frankie, I don't have much to do with it anymore. Smith, I'm creative editorial director, so I have a lot to do with it. But the other parts, I've actually become more involved because I think the bigger something gets, it can get quite, as we all know, out of control, and you can lose that attention to detail, which we really, really try and remain a grip on. So
I'm going to correct myself. I thought that the magazine tutorial would be over, but it's not. I think we might continue after this break. You're listening to a very, very special edition of The Stack. We're coming to you from Sydney today. Robin Holt is our guest and also Louise Bannister. We are back in a moment.
Subscribe to Monocle and you'll receive 10 hefty issues and our two seasonal newspapers delivered anywhere in the world. You'll also receive our special edition canvas tote bag and sometimes even invitations to special events in our key markets. With a variety of subscription options, Monocle is available monthly from £45, and you can also order our special gift package for friends and clients who want to keep an eye on the world. Subscribe today at monocle.com or pop into our shops in Tokyo, Hong Kong, London, and New York.
And you're back with a stack here on Monocle 24, a very special edition of the program. We jumped over the Tasman. We were in Auckland last week. As many listeners will know, we are now in Sydney talking to Robin Holt, of course, someone who's very, very dear to the entire Monocle family, managing director to kick off the business. Of course, famous for her time at Vogue Living, also blazed a bit of a trail with Condé Nast in Russia, and also Louise Bannister's co-founder of Frankie Magazine. And also, I would say, I know maybe it was a bit unfair earlier, but I do believe that probably more people, has to do with our male listenership. I think maybe more people know the Smith Journal. And again, a title which is frequently name-checked here on the stack. Before we went to the break, we were just talking about the state of doing business and really, you know, that whole side of Louise, you made an interesting point too, which I didn't pick up on at the time, saying, you know, oh, well, we're both control freaks. And I'm always amazed, Robin, I don't know what you think, when people say, when they're partly sort of apologetic or some editors say, oh, you know, I just sort of let lots of other people get on with it. Like, isn't your job as an editor to be sort of across the whole thing? And when you're a publisher as well.
I think it's a real mistake to actually take your hands off the wheel, no matter how fantastic your people are. And as, you know, a CEO of lots of various companies, you have to be on the floor. You have to be in the engine room. You have to actually be side by side. I remember working in the early days with you, and I'm sure it's exactly the same today, where you want to see not only every page and what, you know, what is written on every page and writing it and rewriting the headlines and doing those things, but also going and talking to the clients, where the ad placement's going to be, how it's going to be, how it's going to be promoted, what does it look like on stand, where are we going with this, what are the subscriptions. And if you don't have a handle on that, then you don't have a handle on your business.
No, did you look at my diary already? I was seeing your friend Andrew McAvoy already from Australian Tourism. We're seeing the people from Wool. We're seeing and of course tomorrow we're seeing our distributors and people.
And so you should. I mean, I think otherwise the thing is that you are actually then, if you like, down the line for information. And information, as you know, gets passed along to hear what you want to hear. I have to make one correction to you. I am no longer the chairperson of the Northern Territories Tourism. Change of government, all over Rover.
All over Rover. Okay, well.
That's sad. Very sad. So tell Andrew McAvoy when you see him today.
Okay. The Crocs are going to be okay. No, I'm not talking about the shoes either, are they? There was actually a very interesting story earlier in the week about your leader of the opposition and some idea about they wanting to move tens of thousands of civil service jobs up to the Northern Territories. And this idea of, you know, whether they're people, you know, processing things, but just moving a lot of government up there. And then one of the local newspapers or one of the main sort of news organs up there did this wonderful, I mean, absolutely hysterical list about, okay, if you're moving from Melbourne or Adelaide or even from Brisbane, prepare yourself for Darwin, folks. And it was just sort of, it was a wonderful thing saying that, you know, leave your lettuce outside for about 7 days and then you'll know what the produce is like, you know, when you go into the grocery stores. It was incredibly rude about Darwin, but it was written by Darwinians as well. So
Darwin's great. It's when you leave Darwin that things can get a little tough.
You mean this leaving the city limits when you're still
absolutely
in there, right? Okay, there's a whole lot. What's when we launch our travel program? I did want to ask both of you, though. Louise, do you think that there's something has changed in publishing? And Robin, you'll remember, you know, and it still exists in many companies, this idea of the division between church and state and how can you be involved in the creative process? You know, how can you be sort of the creative who's, you know, working on Smith Journal right now, but then also involved and getting your hands dirty by being involved in advertising and talking to advertisers and then also getting, you know, involved with the distribution business? Because, you know, I still come up against people who say, I only do editorial. I only do creative. I don't get involved in commercial things.
It's interesting on the titles that I work on because it's integral that I'm involved in advertising because we built both titles on a 30%, 70% advertising editorial model. So we were always about getting the right advertisers because it was a minimal advertising space and yada, 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 which was a lot harder with Frankie in the beginning because people didn't know what we did and all that kind of stuff. But now with Smith, you know, we half design some ads, but we are much more confident to say, no, that's not going to suit. It's all about our readers. And I know that sounds like such a cliche, but it actually is all about our readers because they are the ones that have pushed Frankie to these incredible heights.
Yeah, and you'll hear from them.
Exactly. Yes, all the time.
Robin, do you think that those walls are breaking down? I'm still surprised sometimes, and maybe it's different in maybe big organizations. You don't want people running riot through the joint, and there need to be barriers, etc. But you do hear from time to time where someone's in it and they say, "Oh, I don't go into advertising meetings. I'll go and write my copy."
I think it's a very interesting changing world where you really did. If I go back, you know, sort of two or three decades, which I can do in the Vogue days, it was very much church and state, you know, and the advertising people were looked down upon by the editorial people. And now there's such an interlacing between the two. There has to be, because also you've got to add into that a third thing, which is the digital mix. And that, in fact, becomes, if you like, a melange of everything. It's a little bit of advertising. It's a little bit of editorial, and it's about the brand. And if you don't know what's happening with your brand at any given time, be it editorial or advertising or digitally, then you've lost the place, you know, you really do. So editors, publishers, even junior editors, advertising, sales execs, marketing people all need to speak and all need transparency on speak, because you need to be talking with one voice.
And would you say that's the same at Frank & Smith Journal?
Definitely. We have a cohesive philosophy. So everybody, we have a lot of team meetings. We have a lot of team strategy days. There's 13 of us and everyone understands the brand's ethos. So much so that sometimes the national advertising manager will come to me and say, "Louise, we cannot take this out. It doesn't suit the brand." Now that is a change from 9 years ago. You know, she may not make commission, but she will say, "Louise, no. I don't
think so." And also knows that if you don't take that ad today, it's going to be to the benefit of the title, because if you do, I mean, who's not going to come in?
But that is such a shift, because I've worked with advertising people that would run you over to put an ad in. So.
No, absolutely. I want to just turn our focus, though, to Australia right now. And I was saying at the top of the program that this is officially our third biggest market for Monocle, which is amazing.
Yay.
And you've seen a shift, Robin, from the days when the UK really led, because it was the home market, even though the magazine's always been international, but it was always traditionally it was UK, then it was the United States, then it was Germany, and then it was Canada and Australia sort of duking it out for fourth or fifth place. And what's interesting is not so much that other markets have slipped, but Australia, and we're trying to come to grips with it. You know, why is it growing in this market? And I think part of it, is the resources boom in this country. There's this extraordinary affluence. And I think about how we covered, we've certainly sort of covered the likes of Brazil. And you look at, Brazil and Australia are very different. But when you suddenly have a sector of society who they just want to trade up. They want to trade up with everything, whether it's fashion, whether it's the car they have, but also media as well. And I think people forget that. But you might have been in the world of buying your sport magazine or just your average men's title, but then you want to learn a little bit more about the world because you've got more money in your pocket. And I think that's I'm trying to put it down to all of the sort of the fly in, fly out men and women, who are going out of Perth, because our airport sales are very strong in this country. So that, anyway, it's just interesting looking at this market. And the other thing too is, heaven, sometimes you go to the United States and we of course thump on this theme quite a bit, but it is just so much doom and gloom. But here there's innovation. You see new titles coming out of this market, and it's a healthy, vibrant newsstand. So to both of you, what's going on in Australia? Is it remoteness? It's amazing. I mean, you're not even in Sydney. I mean, you're up halfway up the coast doing your magazine, which is amazing. I can't even think of something that the scale that you're doing not being in a major city, which is kind of remarkable. I know you've got teams elsewhere, but nevertheless. So to both of you, Robin first, what's going on in Australia right now?
Do you know, I've actually thought a lot about it when I actually ask people about what they're reading and what they're doing. And I think there's just such an overdose of information in the marketplace, particularly with, everything that's on the web. And let me say that part of your, of Monocle's web presence is part of the success of it, because it is a place that you can go and feel at home. You can listen to it. You can view it. You can read it. You can do all sorts of things. But I think that we do still reach out to see what is happening in other parts of the world. And I know that when you set out to do Monocle, and it's, I've always described it as this, it's like going to the best sort of dinner party and sat next to the most interesting guest and had the best conversation. And I think that's what Australians are actually looking for now, the great conversations, as opposed to all of our newspapers have had it, as far as I'm concerned. When I look at and pick up something like the FT Weekend and go, oh my gosh, you know, why don't we have this calibre of writing? And I think that we actually start to benchmark ourselves. We're no longer apologising. We're no longer saying, oh, well, we're Australian. We're actually going, no, okay, where is the bench on this? You know, and this is what we've got to offer, and not necessarily justification. It's more about InDesign, for instance, reaching out and looking what's happening in Europe, what's happening in Holland, what's happening in Belgium, all of those things, what's happening in architecture. And we're now saying, well, this is what we're doing, this is how we're going. And I think that AAA rating that we've had for a long time through this, through the economic bad times, has given us a certain sense of confidence to be able to say, we're okay, we really are okay. Now, I think that what we're going to get is a bit of, no, our Australian magazines in some instances, certainly not yours, are not up to scratch. And I think that that's only going to be a good thing. Bauer buying ACP from CVC will eventually put their German hands across it and say, this is working, this is not good enough, because they're benching against what Europe is. So I expect to see a fair amount of cleanup in our product that we're making, and we're looking for the very best to be produced here and benching it against the world.
How do you see it, Lewis?
I would agree. I definitely think that Australians are more confident to say, a bit like what Robin was saying, you know, standing up and saying we're here. And I also think there's a lot of incredibly creative people out there that perhaps have been a little bit modest in the past. Definitely, I think when I think about Frankie's readership, you know, 25 to 35 is the majority. There's incredible people doing the most incredible things in the most remote parts of Australia, and you just never really heard of them before because they've had no reason to really shout out about it. But now with blogging and all that kind of stuff, people are coming together, and I think it's always been there, but I think maybe it's a confidence thing, or people are feeling there's more avenues to be able to talk about it.
Right.
Perhaps.
I mean, do you also think, though, part of it is, you know, the various engines that have, or yeah, well, I guess, you know, multiple engines, or maybe it's the fuel in the engine of the Australian lifestyle machine. So do you think also part of it is facilitated because of the food boom and what's happened, or because of the cafe boom, that also has given publishers a confidence? Say, well, look, if I can be running three great cafes, or I can go and start my own amazing roastery, or I can do all of these different things in this sector, well, why the hell can't I actually sort of go and launch a magazine? And I'm wondering if this, and I don't want to say it's self-published, and you guys have become certainly of a different scale, but you started smaller, but you've just grown confidently and with a focus and vision. Do you think that's also why we're seeing other titles sprouting up in Australia?
I think so too. Yeah, that's a really good point, in the sense that there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there, and there are a lot of, I hate to say trends, but people are following slow food and all that kind of jazz. So they do want to follow a magazine that Smith Journal is really my interests and a lot of people's interests around me. So there's a lot of people that will relate to it because it's what we're all living. It's how Australians are living. So it's quite genuine and easy to put together because, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Robin, do you think, we saw, the Aussie bankers go overseas and all of those things, and those come and go. And of course, as you said, this country's had an extraordinary, run of having a great rating has come out very well and is globally respected for being fiscally responsible. But it's sexy on one side, but it's also, maybe not what sparks small enterprise booms. You need the stability of an economy. You need stability of government, etc. There are other sort of currents out there. So do you think it's been the way we've seen small Australian film, etc., that's also, perhaps paved the way for young publishers, young editors to do interesting things here?
I have to agree with Louise when I say that, when she says that there's a lot of creative energy down here. Now, I don't know whether it's part of our education system, whether in fact, my daughter, who's a teacher, I watch them, I really encourage young kids to express themselves visually. So we're visually very strong. I wish our film industry had a lot more. I mean, Jackie Weaver, who's up for yet another Oscar, said that our film industry is still cottage. And I think we look at it upon that when, in fact, it should be about big business. But going back to the point of creativity, I think that there are so many young creative people and now real opportunity to either self-publish or be a blogger or have the experience of creating, if you like, a conversation in the media sphere, which is a very, very interesting thing to be able to happen. And I applaud it because I think there are so many wonderful young voices that are being heard now and visually too. You know, there are so many new galleries opening. There is so much going on in this country, and it sort of feels a little bit like a sort of a renaissance rebirth. Is it the fact that we survived it? Oh my God, here we are. We didn't get washed up on the beach. We're okay. So maybe there's a little bit of that attitude that goes along with it, which says, look at us, we're okay. And the next generation of kids coming out of the school system go, I'm going to have a go at this.
Yeah.
And I think that is very different to two decades ago where, you know, go and do economics, be sensible, get a career, as opposed to now, have a go at it.
Yeah, and I think therein lies the power because a lot of people are going to be asking very soon if they're not asking it already, so what do you do for an encore, Australia? And I think that's a huge question. But we're probably not going to try to answer that in this program. You are listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brûlé, Robin Holt and Louise Bannister. We're going away for a very short break. We're back in a moment. And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24, a very special edition of the program. We were coming from Sydney today. Now, we were talking about the power of the newsstand and people's appetites. A question I don't ask at every program, but Louise, are you a subscriber? And of course, you want to be out there pushing subscriptions. Of course, you want to see your magazine out there on newsstand. But when it comes to your own personal consumption of periodicals, where do you go and how do you like to consume magazines?
Oh, well, I'm not really a subscriber, which sounds terrible to be honest.
I know, is it awful? I'm the same as well.
I love
a good newsstand.
I do love a good newsstand, and I don't feel committed to any one magazine because I think this is the reason why we make magazines is because you don't feel committed to one in particular. So I don't have a love for a particular one. It was very difficult for me to find three. So no, I don't subscribe. And if I do, it's a bit of a fad, like maybe Colours for a year but then it might drop off or something like that. But Newsstands, the one in Taylor Square News Agency is wonderful, which I've never really been into before, funnily
enough.
Agreed. But amazing. Yeah. So just in there, and that inspires me. You know, that's awesome. And then, of course, Magnation and things like that are great too.
Of course. Robin?
I am a bit of a subscriber. You know, I get caught up in the, oh, my gosh, not that I'm going to get anything, but just...
You're going to miss one of them.
I'm going to save money and all those sorts of things. But because I've had a whole lifestyle background and to do with design... for me, you know, to actually get, and I am a subscriber to Veranda, I am a subscriber to House Beautiful, because they are, if you like, almost my daily, you know, what colour's in, what are they saying, what has this decorator done, what are they doing, those type of things. Vogue Living, of course, it's my old title and I almost feel like a mother to it that I don't dare walk away from it in case it falls over. So so I've always been a subscriber to Vogue Living. I dip in and out of other things, and I do that same thing of actually walking into a newsstand and being seduced by a cover, by a cover line, by a colour. You know, I want to have that happen to me, you know, because I love that. And of course, I'm a subscriber to Monocle. I wouldn't dare not be.
Do you, Robin, and then Louise, I'll come to you, but do you like a serendipitous newsstand experience that you're going in to discover, or do you like a really organized newsstand? Because I know some people feel very different. Some people like to know that they go into a Relay or they go into, you know, Pressbyrån in Sweden or wherever it is, and they know exactly where that magazine is going to be, you know, no matter, you know, what issue, what time of day. In fact, they can go into different branches of that if it's a chain and they know exactly where it is, versus, you know, going to slightly, you know, higgledy piggledy, you know, it might be here, might be there, but oh my goodness, you might discover a gem.
You know, I like order.
I know you like order. That's why I asked you. I like
huge order. So I do like to actually know exactly where things are. And often when you're traveling, you don't have the luxury of actually doing the investigation of, you know, I know it's here somewhere. Where is it? And you walk out frustrated. So I think that it depends on where your location is. And, you know, if you're next to a wonderful cafe and you happen to find this eccentric bookstore come, you know, magazine, then you've got all the time in the world with the coffee in your hand to just peruse and go up and down, whatever. But if I'm at an airport or a train station, I want to know exactly, go there, get it, and get on the train or the plane.
Mm.
So I'm a great believer in that sense of order based on the location. I just found a great one today. It was an art store in Mary Street.
Published art.
Love it.
Yeah,
published absolutely arts. Love it. Now, that's a bookstore, come magazine, come passionate
Almost
woman.
Like a gallery as well. I mean, just the level of passion that she has for what she sells.
And I mean, now that, I don't care where she puts them because she intrigues you, she walks you through. You feel like you've walked into her sitting room.
Yeah, and you're really sort of being led through her selection. Louise, you're nodding over there.
I am. I totally agree because the chaos of a really big newsagent does not inspire me at all. And I think I'm on a time limit. And as a young mother now, I'm like, oh my God, I'm even on a worse time limit. And I've got to get back to work and I've got about 5 minutes to finish stuff. So I love to walk into a space that's inspiring as well, which published art is. Mm. And, be immersed in that. Because then you immediately trust the shop because you know it's beautiful. So you know there's going to be quality products. Whereas in a newsagent, you might not have the time. Therefore, you might miss something. So I don't like that. I don't like that uncertainty.
Well, we sent our Aisha Spears down to that very newsstand that you mentioned at Taylor Square. And she did a little perusing through the aisles. Let's have a listen.
My name is John Hoey. I'm working at Taylor Square newsagent, Piggott's newsagent, Taylor Square, Sydney. And it's been here at least 30 years, this newsagent.
And this newsagent is somewhere where everybody in Sydney talks about. It really is, you know, heralded as the best newsagent in the city. Tell me a little bit about what it looks like and how many titles you stock in here.
We try to get everything we can. So even one or two copies of something, magazines, muscle magazines, the car magazines, fashion magazines. And especially around here, there's a lot of design shops and fashion houses. So we try to keep up with them and get all the style magazines. Everything just comes straight from the catwalks. They can be here within as fast as air freight and the magazine's printed. So in a couple of days, they're here. People often ringing up straight away. Have you got the latest this and that and the other? They go, yes, it's just come in. And in the mornings, the girls come in from the fashion houses having a look for what's available.
And it's full. I mean, there are people in here the whole way through the day. It's a buoyant magazine industry here in Sydney. People are continuously wanting to buy print magazines.
No, it's been really good. The financial crisis sort of hurt a little bit, but it's been coming. This year's a lot better coming back. And people are not worried about the expense. Air freight is naturally more expensive, but people are happy to have the magazines as quick as possible.
And are you seeing a local scene? Are you selling many magazines that are Australian?
Yes, there's a few titles. There's some skate magazines and some artistic ones and like graffiti magazines and a few comics, but not a lot, but there are some available, yes.
How is the shop organised? How do you decide which magazines go where and how the papers fit into that?
Mark Piggott's the son here and he sort of organised things over time, so he's really on top of it, especially with the fashion. That's his main frame, so we get all those magazines. Everything else, it's available, but it's mostly the fashion we concentrate on.
And what really flies off the shelves? I mean, is there a magazine that comes in and that you just can't keep your hands on?
Well, the new Monocle, it comes out, people go and grab it, that's for sure. But the fashion ones like Vanity Fair, Tatler, Vogue, all the Vogues come in and then everyone wants the, you know, specific Vogue, you know, German, Italian, all those ones. So yeah, if they're in and people know, they come straight in and ask for them.
And it's very much your traditional newsagent. You know, we had a lot of those in England and they've sadly kind of been absorbed into bigger kind of book, you know, chains and bookstores. The same thing in the States. There's a few that have survived in their independence. But is there a real culture of independent newsagents in Australia and how do you survive?
Yes, they're mostly independent. I think they've gone into different areas now. So they do, there's bus tickets and they do stationery and everything to help out, like food, lollies and things. The magazines is the most thing and it's just, it's quite difficult because they are expensive and you have to keep up the stock. It's partly up to the owners who want to do those things.
And do you have any particular favourites that you'd want to talk about in terms of titles that are either particularly rare or the ones that do really well or ones that you personally like?
I sort of like everything. It's interesting, people bring up to the counter and there's magazines you just can't keep up with everything and you go, oh, what's that one? And you have a little look and it's something about art or something about fashion, or it's fusion. A lot of art and fashion gets fused together now with drawings and graffiti and things. So always interested to have a look at that. But I sort of like everything, so I'm happy to have a look at a lot.
And the customer, who's the customer who comes in here at Taylor Square?
Everybody from the pensioners coming for their magazines and the papers, and then the fashion houses come in when they know the local mags are in. And there's a lot of houses here that actually order from us, and they'll have their orders first thing in the morning. We get all the papers because they want to see if their ads are out, and then they'll buy the magazines. The girls will come in and just cruise around and have a look and then buy the papers at the same time.
And how has this neighbourhood changed? How has Taylor Square and then Paddington changed over the last few years?
The retail has dropped off, that's for sure. A lot of convenience shops. Things have dropped off a little bit, but it's starting to pick up a little bit again now. So there's more food shops opening. We just need a few more shops like us, you know, selling magazines and books.
Are there many others like you? I mean, if someone's not in Paddington, is it easy to find magazines here in Sydney, or is it getting harder?
I think we're one of the best. We have the biggest range. There's one at King's Cross, and there used to be one in the city, but they're more specialty houses now. They're specialty magazine shops, not traditional newsagents.
Do you have any idea of how many titles you carry?
Thousands. I do the returns, so I see them all coming back, but I couldn't even tell you. No, it's thousands.
And that was our Aisha Spears doing a bit of an Australian magazine troll there. Speaking of troll, you've both brought in a number of titles with you. Louise, I want to start with you. You said you've got three or four. Why don't you go to the top of the stack there, or at least you can shuffle it however you want. What title do you want to start with, and why do you like it?
I'm going to start with Donna Hay because I am a fan of Donna, because everything she does is impeccable and her attention to detail is superb.
And Donna Hay, if someone is not familiar with Donna Hay, but hopefully most people listening to this program will be familiar with Donna Hay. Donna Hay is one of the food and, I guess, loudly lifestyle doyens of this country. Now, Louise, you mentioned as that also you're a new mum as well. Does part of this become a bit of escapism? Is Donna Hay something that you look at and think, I'm not going to make all of those things, but I might take a styling cue, the way something is arranged. I love the choice of crockery, or I'm hoping that the light will just hit my breakfast table just so one morning. What is it?
It's not that at all, actually. It's more that I've read Donna for a long time. It's more that I feel that Lara and I relate to her in a sense, because I think she controls all of her brand. So I'm always inspired. And I also think it's wonderful that she's moved into the digital world quite seamlessly, because she understands what a magazine does. And she obviously understands now what an iPad does. So when I downloaded her app, I was amazed that she wasn't trying to fit something into something else that didn't work. So again, I thought, wow, she's had a think about this. She's actually sat down at a table and written down the objectives. And I just really admire that, because I don't see that often, you know. And I admire Donna Hay magazine as well, because I don't buy it for the recipes, funnily enough. But then even on the plane, I was reading it and I thought, oh my God, I've got to make that, because I was so seduced by the aesthetics of it. So I don't know if that answered the question.
No, I think gosh, very much so. Robert, of course, your background with Vogue Living as well. What's interesting is that Donna also has it's a very signature aesthetic. It represents, I think, another way of Australian photography, styling, etc. And some would criticize her for saying it hasn't sort of really moved on well. But I think if you do look, it does move, and she's a commercially savvy lady. You don't have to sort of be the coolest kid in school every week to have a good publishing gig.
I think it's the thing about your signature, and I think you actually learn what your signature is. And Donna has learned this, and she goes from a printed magazine to a television program to a downloaded app to a retail store. Now, all of those areas need a certain, if you like, umbrella signature to really be able to function and function well. And that's what I think that she's done. And to deviate from that and suddenly throw that out when in fact it's working would be foolish from a brand perspective. And you would say, okay, you can slightly vary it, but why would you want to change it that much?
Right, Robin, I can't see what's on the top of your pile there because of this large screen in front of me, but
it is very NASA, I got to say.
It
that.
Is. Which
I've got House Beautiful on top of mine, because when I was doing that sort of mad television design thing, I have to say that this was a magazine that became my Bible, and I quite loved it because it had a rhythm to it that really I felt very comfortable with. And talking about apps, it's a seriously great app, you know, and, you know, you can actually go into it and really know what's behind it. Where something like Veranda that I've got here, I would just sometimes flip it and not necessarily even stop at anything, but it just, like, the best of the best. I mean, as a cover line, I mean, are we over that? We're seriously, seriously over that. So, I mean, I did, you know, when it came through the mail, would I have bought that issue? The answer's no.
No.
So that's what's interesting about being a subscriber, is that sometimes they come through the mailbox at you and you think, I would have never bought that, but curiosity gets you to flip it and go, I would have been right. I shouldn't have bought it.
We're going to take a very short break. You're listening to The Stack. We're in Sydney today. We're back in a moment. And you're back with The Stack here in Sydney. We are coming to you from the School of Film, Television, and appropriately enough, radio in Moore Park, in a lovely part of town. I'm not sure if I want to shop here though, in the retail area beyond the studios. But nevertheless, a very, very lovely school. The same. Our guests today are Robin Holt and Louise Bannister. Louise, I'm going to bat it back to you. I can see Dwell peeking out there, and you both. I believe you also have the New Yorker as well.
Yes, but I have a confession about the New Yorker. Mm. I only read the New Yorker on my iPad, so I just bought it, just to explain that really, because as a magazine itself, I don't find it very inspiring, obviously, from an aesthetic point of view, but on the iPad, I find it really interesting because it reads like a newspaper, but mm-hmm. it's just very accessible.
Mm.
No.
Robin. You can either reflect on the New Yorker if you want, or you can talk about what's...
No, I think, I mean, for me now, I've just, I don't buy any fashion magazines anymore, which is sort of odd, and I guess it's because
it's because they're given to you, or you just don't actually...
I don't access them at all.
Right.
I do it on the net, and I think that the Business of Fashion, which is that website, sort of really just summarizes it to me about what's happening in the world, you know, and it could be something they've picked up from The Guardian, it could be something that they've picked up from somewhere else. So I feel informed about fashion and the business side of fashion. And if I want to look at it, now it's all, you know, live streamed by, you know, IMG. Thank you very much if you want to look at any of the collections.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I'm craving to see what's in fashion. And maybe it's an age thing, I'm not sure. But I also don't feel that once upon a time they used to write great features in, say, something like American Vogue. They've been diminished and diminished and diminished. And even British Vogue, I don't think have got great features in them anymore. So I don't actually buy them anymore. Isn't that odd? I mean, I dip in and out of lots of different things. I'll go and buy a Russian AD, for instance. And it just depends really where I am. If I'm traveling, if I'm traveling a lot, then I just, you know, I arm load myself.
Yeah.
You know, I used to go to Darwin every 3 weeks, which is a 4-hour journey. So, you know, you really get an opportunity, you know, for there and for back, 8 hours of solid reading. I mean, it's a great time.
You made an interesting point, Robin, about the signature of Donna Hay and Louise, you were saying the same. I want to, and then also, Robin, you say just maybe not a rejection, but just maybe a lack of interest, or there's other channels, you know, of how you access fashion. With Frankie's very interesting how it has its own signature when it comes to fashion. Now, for maybe, you know, the uninitiated, is it, again, a very, very strict brief? And I've not sort of looked at everyone who gets involved on the fashion side of the magazine, but is it a tight clutch of photographers? Is it the strong hand of just, you know, the art desk? What is it?
Well, Lara, the creative director and co-founder as well, she set the style, Donna Hay style, you know, signature of Frankie, and has remained quite tight gripped on it. But also Frankie went through we actually won Fashion Mag of the Year last year, and we all had to have a bit of a giggle because we don't consider ourselves a fashion magazine at all. We are not a fashionable office. It's not what we're about. It's it's quite funny. And we've actually got rid of all the models in the magazine because we were like, why are we looking at 15-year-olds? None of us relate to them. Why do we think we have to be this, you know, type of magazine? We don't have models on the front anymore. We changed that 3 issues ago and it's gone really well for us. And inside the magazine, now it's just all about products and coming up with ways to shoot the products creatively, which is much more challenging. But to answer your question, definitely Lara's signature on it. But also, you know, other, we have Holly, who's our, she assists Lara and she sort of dips into the styling and things like that. And we have some really great stylists who have taken a long time to understand the Frankie aesthetic, because for years people thought we were just crazy and a bit quirky. And
no, and it's, well, we know it can happen on an editorial floor when you let some stylists run wild. And
oh, no, don't.
I mean, but Robin, I think you've been in far trickier positions than I have, but it's talk about tight leashes.
But I mean, how do you feel about the fashion in Monocle and the weight of what you actually do with fashion and the sort of signature that you have around fashion in Monocle? What was your philosophy on that, or what is your philosophy?
I think that, you know, it always comes back to what was always a bad word. I think it's still a bad word in many a PR office and if you speak to many designers, and that was about wearability. And I think we were very, very focused on who is our reader and unapologetic about, we were not trying to appeal to a 17-year-old. We're not, and even for, you know, let's say the big, you know, our biggest advertisers, we're not trying to migrate that brand down to that age group. And so I think that we've always looked at what do guys need, and you know, they want a great brogue and they want a good trouser, and you know, is a jacket going to be half a centimeter longer or shorter, whatever it is, and we've left it, and I guess I looked to retail in the very beginning. I thought about my favorite stores, what did I like, and one of the first conversations I had was with Karina San, who is the creative director of United Arrows in Japan, and I said, look, I said, who have been some of your disciples that you've worked with? Is there someone that you might be able to recommend who could come and be our fashion editor and approach it in a different way, which is more like a buyer?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that still is very, it's at the core of what we do. Would you want to buy it? I'm not interested in making the most extraordinary picture, you know, of all time. No, will someone look at that and think that is a great looking jacket? Or does, of course, the composition, everything, does it actually sort of pick up something that, okay, maybe it's not the jacket, but there's something about the ambiance of where that person is that is a look I want to buy into. And I think 6 years on, I think we've still come good on that. And that's partly because of Takaharu Sato, our fashion director, and Akio Hasegawa, who's our other stylist in Japan, and a very, very tight team of photographers. And, you know, Rob, you said in the beginning, I mean, I think it's, and that's what's interesting about Frankie as well. It's, you know, people do want product. I don't think that they want to be indulging in someone's, you know, future, you know, photo portfolio.
Well, that's exactly what it turns out to be, is that the photographer ends up dictating what the visual is going to look like, versus that this is part and parcel of your mandate, is to show clothes that people might want to buy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, and when you look at that and read, you know, even Grace Coddington's book of the early days of creating, you know, it's just about creating fantasy, which I don't mind. But
everyone likes a bit of fantasy.
But it's not about how to actually extend the information to the reader where you buy it, and something that you can actually see what it looks like.
No, and do you think that's the type of feedback as well, that you're just, it's always, you know, it's not just sales, Louise, but also do you feel it's validated every issue just by the correspondence that you get from readers?
Yeah, definitely. But going back to just when you were saying about photographers, we've been very lucky, I guess, because we have been quite controlling in the sense that they've never really run wild. And it's actually been a point of contention sometimes where they're, well, we'd like to shoot a portrait. Well, no, we want a landscape. So it's been quite full on from the beginning about what our vision and how we want it to look and things like that. But now, because we're trusting with a lot of people, they get to have a little bit of a say and things like that.
But we always come back to the mantra in publishing, which is, don't follow your heart. Follow the brief. Or follow what the editors
have asked for.
Right? That's how it goes. That's the essence of a very good magazine. Robin, great to see you in Sydney.
Wonderful to see you, Tyler. Thank you for asking me to be on the show. And as always, your conversation, whether it be in print or in person, is always fabulous.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you very much. Louise, great to see you as well. Of course, Frankie, you're cranking them out at a rate of knots. So when do we see the next Smith Journal?
comes out on March the 3rd. So it's literally in design time this week.
Okay, yeah.
Last 5 days.
Excellent. Yes. We love that. We love that moment. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this 25th edition of The Stack here in Sydney. My guests today have been Robin Holt and Louise Bannister. Our producers were Don Trump and Adrian Craddock. Actually, it is Don Trump and Adrian Craddock in London. Also, Aisha Spears has been looking after us here at the Australian Film Television Radio School here in Sydney. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. Of course, you can always listen again via monocle.com or iTunes. But for now, for me, it's goodbye, and we are back at base in London next week. More then.